From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Dr. Judy Wood joins us as she talks about directed energy technology. Where did the towers go? Stand by for that. But here's what's happening. Well, bit by bit, new details about the raid that killed the world's most wanted terrorist trickled out Tuesday. Unexpectedly, high temperatures caused a lumbering helicopter carrying elite commandos to make a hard landing. A woman killed in the raid is believed to have been the wife of a courier whose trail led to Osama bin Laden. And as Navy SEALs swept through the massive compound, they handcuffed those that they encountered with plastic zip ties and pressed on to pursue their target, codenamed Geronimo. Then, once bin Laden had been shot, they doubled back to move the prisoners away from the compound before blowing up the downed helicopter. The fuller picture of the high-stakes assault emerged as U.S. officials weighed whether to release secret video and photos of bin Laden killed with a precise shot above the left eye. Doug Hagman, who's been monitoring this entire story for us. Doug, I'm told that they may release a photo. It's pretty gruesome. What do you hear?
Two different stories. One story that was echoed by Representative King of New York today, saying that his understanding of the photograph was it was not so gory and gruesome, totally inconsistent with the information that was recently released, that there was a gaping wound to the front of the forehead. So there's currently different stories right now with respect to the photographic documentation that could be released.
And the Taliban now, they're casting suspicion, Doug, on the announcement of bin Laden's death, saying that they won't believe it until they have seen proof or receive confirmation from their sources close to him.
Well, indeed, and I have to say that it's interesting because we're monitoring the Arabic language side of this as well, and there is a lot of information on the by individuals who are reliable posters saying that they don't believe that this occurred in the manner in which we are stating it occurred. And in fact, they believe that Osama bin Laden was not present at that compound. Whether or not, of course, that is true, it doesn't matter to what we believe. It's what they believe. And that's the important thing we have to remember.
Okay, Doug, thanks. Doug's website, part of coasttocoastam.com. Our poll, we've got 15,000 of you have already voted on our Insta poll, which simply says, should Osama bin Laden's body have been buried at sea? You can go and see the results right now. But 42% of you, 42% say the body was not bin Laden and that the burial at sea is part of a cover-up, 42%. As a matter of fact, I was on WGN television this morning in Chicago talking about this poll, and pretty astounding numbers. Several states have started reassessing their medical marijuana laws after stern warnings from the federal government that everyone from licensed growers to regulators could be subjected to prosecution. The letters from U.S. attorneys in recent weeks have directly injected the federal government back into the debate that has for years been progressing at the state level. Warnings in Washington state, for example, to veto a proposal that would have created licensed marijuana dispensaries. Chris Conrad is a court-qualified expert witness on cannabis and a curator of the Hash Marijuana Hemp Museum in Amsterdam. He's on the line with us right now. Chris, let me ask you, this story's incredible where it looks like the federal government is beginning to flex its muscles. States seem to be backing down.
Yeah, this is a constitutional crisis in effect, at least, because since the founding of the United States, the states have had sovereignty to write their own laws. And last year, the Supreme Court acknowledged this when it refused to hear the San Diego versus California case here. So then for the feds to start making these threats against patients and providers is nothing new, but to go after state healthcare workers, that is a new level of intimidation.
It sure is. In your opinion, Chris, what's going to happen to this railroad of trying to get marijuana legalized in many states? Is it going to stop?
Actually, I'm hoping that this will be seen as a challenge to the states to make Obama do the right thing, demand that the federal government live up to the promise of the Ogden memo of recognizing states' medical marijuana laws, and to try to get the DEA to reschedule medical marijuana, or maybe even this could be something that could help jumpstart the drive to get marijuana out of the drug schedule and treat it more like alcohol, which I think is more appropriate anyway.
All right, very good. Thank you, Chris. Sony CEO Howard Stringer faced harsh criticism of his leadership after the consumer electronics conglomerate revealed hackers may have stolen the data of another 25 million accounts. This is on top of the 77 million and a second massive security breach. A Southern California family returning home after church found their six-year-old dog covered with bee stings, convulsing in the backyard. The 40-pound dog named Inu died minutes later near the hive under the eave of the family's home. He had been attacked by 25,000 bees. Sherry sent me this email today of a great story, and I want to read it to you. Listen to this. Back in September of 2005, on the first day of school, Martha Cothran, a Social Security school teacher at the Robinson High School in Little Rock, did something not to be forgotten. On the first day of school, with the permission of the school superintendent, the principal, and the building supervisor, she removed all the desks out of the classroom. When the first period kids entered the room, they discovered that there were no desks. Miss Cothran, "Where are our desks?" the kids asked. She replied, "You can't have a desk until you tell me how you earn the right to sit at a desk." Well, they thought, "Maybe it's our grades," they said. "No," she said. "Well, maybe it's our behavior." She told them, "No, it's not even your behavior." And so they came and went the first period, second period, third period, still no desks in the classroom. By early afternoon, television news crews had started gathering there in her classroom to report about this crazy teacher who had taken all the desks out of her room. The final period of the day came, and as the puzzled students found seats on the floor of the deskless classroom, Martha Cuthran said, "Throughout the day, no one has been able to tell me just what he or she has done to earn the right to sit at the desks that are ordinarily found in the classroom. Now I'm going to tell you." And at this point, she went over to the door of her classroom and opened it. 27 U.S. veterans, all in uniforms, walked into that classroom, each one carrying a school desk. The vets began placing the school desks in rows, and then they would walk over and stand alongside the wall. Well, by the time the last soldier had set the final desk in place, those kids started to understand, perhaps for the very first time in their lives, just how the right to sit at those desks had been earned. The teacher said, "You didn't earn the right to sit at those desks. These heroes did it for you. They placed the desks here for you. Now it's up to you to sit in them. It's your responsibility to learn, to be good students, to be good citizens. They paid the price so that you could have the freedom to get an education. And don't ever forget it." That, by the way, is a true story. Up next, Howard Bloom joins us. He's going to react to our Insta poll. And also, we're going to be talking about why so many people just don't trust government. Howard is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Howard Bloom, founder of the International Paleo Psychology Project, of course, and is a regular contributor here at Coast to Coast AM. A number of books out there, Global Brain, The Lucifer Principle, and The Genius of the Beast. And here he is back on Coast to Coast AM. Howard, welcome back.
George, it's good to see you. That's an amazing poll.
It really is. And I wanted to get your reaction to that, first of all, before we also get into why so many people just don't trust the government story anymore, regardless of what it seems to be. But here we are with about 42-43% of the listeners who participated in the Insta poll, well over 15,000 total people so far, simply saying they don't believe this story. They don't believe this has been lauded. That's a pretty high number, Howard.
It is an extremely high number, but in a sense, it's not as high as you would think. Remember, we're more or less evenly divided between Democrats and Republicans, and we've been that way for a long time. And when two groups go up against each other, they slime the other to the nth degree. And that has been going on in American politics since the election of 1800, when Thomas Jefferson had secret material written, which he then spread to the public, calling John Adams. Remember John Adams, one of the most colorless presidents of all times, but a man to whom we owe our republic. Jefferson, who we also admire, I admire him tremendously, slimed him with the idea that he was a hermaphrodite. You know what that is? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, that he had sexual organs of both sexes. That's ridiculous. And but those are the depths to which we stoop. And we've been stooping to those depths for 200 years now. And right now, the current alternative narrative is that because there's a Democrat in office, he's got to be absolutely illegitimate. He doesn't come from the United States. He's not constitutionally an American and entitled to run for the office or be in the White House. He is a secret Muslim. He's a plant from the Islamic world. All of these crazy ideas, but they're no crazier than the ideas that, for example, were promoted by, Johnson, when he was trying to slime Goldwater. Remember, Johnson came out with this. Now, Goldwater wanted to give nuclear weapons to troops, and that's a pretty bold and scary move. But Johnson took that and turned it into he turned Goldwater into a monster.
Yeah, he destroyed him with that.
Yes, he absolutely destroyed him, and he leaked all kinds of false stories. Well, dirty politics are not nice, and I dislike them personally tremendously. And the ideal is that we have a civic culture, and in a civic culture, we should be able to talk to each other civilly with a great deal of respect for the fact that we all reflect to a certain extent the same values and that our passion comes from our commitment to the same values. But the fact is, we are not civic creatures, and we are not calm and rational. And in reality, there's a positive, and I hate to say this because I don't think it's positive to constantly be sliming other people, but there is a positive aspect to this, because in other countries, including countries today, people do not contend with lies. People do not contend by libeling each other. People do not contend by slandering each other with bizarre stories of conspiracies. Instead, they contend with weaponry, and they have civil wars, and they have putches, and they have government overthrows. And the results are not nice, and people live under terrible and violent conditions, where, for example, in Africa, your arms are lopped off for political purposes make a political statement.
That's
so we're lucky that this is the worst that we do, words and fantasies.
Well, Howard, my head tells me we got Bin Laden. Our great Navy SEALs did what they had to do, mission accomplished. But there's a part of me that says, maybe we didn't. What took them so long to get him? Why is this going on now? Maybe he died a long time ago. Why did they bury him at sea so quickly? Where's the proof? They still haven't released anything yet. They're debating whether to do it.
And I strongly suspect that they should not release a photo. I think that now Obama made a statement last week about leading from behind, and that statement was snapped up immediately and used against him. But this is one instance where leading from behind is a tremendous advantage. If we are to put out a picture, one of the reports, as you just pointed out in your own broadcast, the facts are still trickling in. We don't know all of them. But one of the reports says that this man was shot through the center of the head and part of his skull was blown off.
Yeah.
Now, if you saw a picture of that and you were a Muslim, you would be so furious for good reason. It would be ridiculous. And it would bring out the worst in you, absolutely the worst in you. And frankly, you and I, if we were in that position, would not be able to help it. We would be infuriated. So releasing a picture is the worst thing that we can do. Burying him at sea so there is no body is the best thing we should do. One thing we have to learn from the Arab street revolts, which you and I have talked about, is that when you have a body and you can have a funeral, you have a casus belli. You have a trigger with which you can bring people pouring into the streets. Martyrdom does something remarkable to people's gut instincts, and it fuses them together in anger against whatever group has done this to us. And if we were to rouse that kind of sentiment with this killing, which was a necessary killing, we had to get rid of this man, unfortunately. But if we were to rouse that kind of anger in the Islamic community, it would be devastating for us. It would mean that Al-Qaeda would win. It would mean that Al-Qaeda would grow in strength. It would mean that the ideas that Osama bin Laden stood for, the ideas of violence and terrorism and killing men, women, and children, but especially women and children, those ideas, we would simply be driving them further home. So Obama's instinct, which seems to be to always stay in the rear, allow other people to take the lead, allow other people to look as if they are doing the leading when, in fact, you are leading from behind. His reticence, his degree of composure, which can sometimes be a great disadvantage when we don't see his emotion, right now it is leading him in the right direction. Do not, please do not show us those photos.
But could this backfire, Howard? And by that I mean, can the Taliban and those militants simply say, he's not dead, don't worry, and let that fester through the
happen.
Young
community? I mean, look
community?
What happened. There was a national hero once upon a time. The Rome or England had lived under British control Britain had lived under the control of the Roman Empire for a long time. Then the Roman Empire began to crumble. And when it crumbled, the Romanized Britons were left all on their own against the barbarians. And they weren't able to handle themselves. The barbarians were far stronger than they were. They were used to civic peace. They weren't used to making war for a living, which is what the barbarians did. And a national hero arose to defend them. And they needed that national hero so badly that when he died, they would not believe in his death, and they believed he would come back. And his name was King Arthur. Well, this is how legends are made, and it's a part of the mythic process that's built into our bones, that's built into our blood. So when you take out the hero of another group, you know you're in for trouble. But you also know something else, that war is a difficult matter, and in war, it's the group that is willing to endure and persist the longest that wins. And sometimes in a battle, by killing somebody you need to kill, and I hate the fact that we have to kill anybody, George, anybody at all, even Osama bin Laden. But when you take out a member of the other group, you know that you can rouse a fury that is going to come at you like a tidal wave. And you have to be prepared to live through that fury and come out on the other side and to last longer than your opponent.
Government mistrust. Why don't people believe in government?
Well,
and when I say that, and I'm saying most of the people, there are some people that do, obviously.
Well, you know this better than I do because you host some of the leading conspiracy theorists from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
But why in the world do we fight for freedom of speech? Why in the world do people like you and me fight for freedom of speech? I think we've both fought for freedom of speech in our time. We do it so that alternative narratives can flourish. We do it so that we can look at things with a critical eye. We do it so that we can entertain our fantasies and then try to root them in reality and see if they fit the facts. And that's how humans learn things. And societies learn things by having many people with many different points of view who test those points of view. And some points of view turn out to be accurate in the end, and some points of view turn out not to be accurate in the end. But without that testing, a society is dead in the water. A society is brain dead. And one of the reasons democracy is winning right now, to the extent that democracy is the word on the mouths of the people in the street revolutions in Egypt and Tunisia and even Syria, is that in a democracy, our ability to contest things and criticize things and present alternative interpretations of things makes us as a society smarter.
So you think that... in terms of belief in government and not, that it's probably healthy.
It is very healthy for us to distrust the government as long as we trust it enough to do the things that are necessary to execute, to make our society run. We are willing to go to work every day. We are willing to be productive. We are willing, and we are very willing to do this. We are willing to give to each other. We are willing to care about each other. We are willing to uplift the fallen as we did in New Orleans, as we're doing right now in the South. When other people are up against an adversity, the rest of us rush in to help them. As long as we manage to maintain our civic virtues and do the things that allow a society, the kind that you and I believe in, a society of freedom of speech, freedom of belief, and respect for each other, as long as we're able to do the necessary things, a certain element of disbelief, even as an entertainment, is a valuable thing.
And Howard, let's take some phone calls when we come back. What's new with you these days? What projects are you working
on? Oh, I'm working on my next book, The Genius of the Beast. The current book is doing well. The Genius of the Beast is a racehorse in Saudi Arabia. In Dubai. There is a racehorse in Dubai named The Beast. He's named after the Genius of the Beast because the chief counselor to the sheikh who runs Dubai got hold of the Genius of the Beast, read it, got up in front of the Arab Business and Economic Forum, told them, you must read this book to understand the future of the Arab business world. It tells the future of Dubai. As a consequence, I have given it to my sheikh to read. That sheikh, by the way, is also Prime Minister of the United Arab Emirates. And the guy who is the chief counselor is also the former Minister of Development. And he also runs a company called Emma Realty, which is a $33 billion company.
Well, that's going to be exciting. Howard, hold on. We're going to come back with you in a moment. Well, you can be a Coast Insider for less than 25 cents a day by simply going to coasttocoastam.com. Next Tuesday, by the way, when I'm back in Los Angeles, we'll do our video chat for you insiders. You get to see me. I won't be able to see you, but we'll be doing that when I'm in L.A. all the time, the first Tuesday of every month. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls with Howard Bloom right here on Coast to Coast AM. So there's a horse running around Dubai, huh?
There's a horse is running around, apparently, on racetracks all over the world. I sent an email to Mohammed Alabar, the person we were just talking about, the person who is the chief counselor to the sheikh who runs Dubai. I'm saying, if you ever get to New York, please let me know, and we'll get together to brainstorm, because I would love to brainstorm with this man. And I got an email back saying, your email made Mr. Alabar's day. He wants you to know that he's named a racehorse after your book, The Genius of the Beast. But here's the irony, George. I am a Jewish atheist, Zionist, and there is a horse running around in the Arab world with my name or the name of my book on it. And then I got an email or a message on Facebook from my dearest fan is in Pakistan. I love him dearly. He gives me enormous energy, and he is a trainer to the Pakistani cricket team. So he is a trainer to the leading stars in Pakistan, the guys who are our equivalent or their equivalent to our NBA stars. And he said, look, there's a new issue of Vanity Fair out, and it's got an article on Warren Buffett. And if I'm not mistaken, the picture of Warren Buffett at his desk has two books on his desk, and one of those books is The Genius of the Beast.
That's great.
So we bought a copy, and sure enough, there's The Genius of the Beast on Warren Buffett's desk. So those are the adventures, at least, of The Genius of the Beast in the last couple of months.
And by the way, you may be an atheist, but I almost had you converted sometime.
Now, you almost have me converted, and the name of the book I am working on now, which won't be out for another year and a half or something like that, the spring, I think, of whatever year is coming up, 2012, it is the God problem, George. So you and I will have something to talk about when I finish writing this book.
Perfect. Let's go to the phones. We'll go to Don, truck driving in Arizona, and he's on Coast to Coast. Hi, Don. Go ahead. You're on with Howard Bloom.
Thank you, George, for taking my call.
Sure.
Got two questions for Howard. Number one, now that the Bin Laden has been taken, do you think that the sleeper cells here in the States are going to be awoken? And the second question is, do you think that we're going to go after the new number one over there?
These are great questions. I'm not aware of sleeper cells in the United States, although I've heard about them for a long time. The word is from Pakistan as of earlier today that that Al Qaeda has set aside all of its previous priorities and it has now made Pakistan the number one enemy. Now that's the Taliban in Pakistan has made Pakistan the number one enemy, but Al Qaeda and number two is the international community, meaning the West. I think we can expect to see increased activity in the West. But with events like the underwear bomber, it's become clear that, or it seems to me, as if Al-Qaeda does not have sleeper cells in the United States. I could be dead wrong about that.
I think they do, Howard. And Zawahiri, who was number two, I'm sure has now been elevated to number one. And I don't think he's too far from where Bin Laden was hiding out.
Well, the speculation from, in this case, from Hong Kong, from somebody who's been doing a number of books on al-Qaeda and seems to have close connections to al-Qaeda operatives, he believes that al-Zawahiri is the person who's been puppeteering Osama bin Laden, and that because Zawahiri doesn't have charm, because al-Zawahiri doesn't have social magnetism and charisma, al-Zawahiri put Bin Laden, a tall man with a grave composure and a face of kindness of all things.
And money,
and has put him up front because he was good for money raising. But Al-Zawahiri, according to this article, which is in the Asia Times today, is the man who's been running things all along. So he may need another puppet. And in fact, the speculation from that source, from the Asia Times, is that in reality, al-Zawahiri has been re-engineering al-Qaeda for the last 10 years so that he could bring a new group of leaders in, and he's got a younger group of leaders now, and take the older group of leaders and send them back to the Middle East to lead the Arab street revolts. Now, this is not me speaking. This is one of the writers for Asia Times, who, as I said, is an expert in al-Qaeda.
I want your opinion on this. I got an email a couple days ago, Monday morning, after I was on Sunday night when the president came out and made the announcement about bin Laden. And the email was, how in the world could you compare Jesus Christ to Osama bin Laden? Are you insane? This is what I said Sunday night, and you
right.
tell me, and you tell me about the statement.
Go ahead.
What I said was, just as Christ was crucified and it didn't end Christianity, if anything, it magnified it, the death of bin Laden will not stop terrorism.
Well,
that's what I said.
It's brilliant, George. I mean, I hate to say something so extremely positive, but it's fucking, sorry,
uh-oh.
Wait, got to get hold of my language. It's brilliant. It really is brilliant. And the fact is that the influence of a person can live on far, far, far beyond his lifetime. And Osama bin Laden, we've discussed this before, but Osama bin Laden was one of the most potent idealists of our entire time. I've spent a good deal of my time over the course of the last 10 or 15 years. I started writing about bin Laden in the 1990s, and I have spent that time trying to feel my way into bin Laden's body so I could feel my way into his mind, because you were told by Sun Tzu, in order to defeat the enemy, be able to walk in the enemy's shoes. And what I've discovered, reading everything that bin Laden has ever put out, this guy was an amazing, committed idealist. And people like that who gain the kind of publicity that bin Laden has gotten, they do not tend to die. And that's why it was so wise not to give us photos. That's why it was so wise to take the body and put it underwater where no one can find it as quickly as possible.
Well, in making the assumption they did get him, then government knows they got him. They probably are saying, who cares what other people say? Let's go to first-time caller Ernest in Washington, D.C. Go ahead, Ernest.
Hello, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, thanks.
I just wanted to say to your guest that I'm not buying the Osama story, and these are the reasons why.
Okay.
Many officials in the past have said that he was been dead for years. Another reason is that when they buried him, they claimed that was keeping the Islamic tradition, but you come to find out hours later that was a violation of Islamic tradition. There's another reason why I'm not believing it, and that's because Pakistan has blockaded America's supplies for the past week, and America has not been able to get supplies into Afghanistan. So I believe that America decided to end the charade and to come up out of Pakistan or even start a war with Pakistan because of the blockade.
All right, let's get your point on this, Howard. And let me ask you this. To me, there's no way Pakistani intelligence didn't know that Osama bin Laden was in that brand-new million-dollar house.
Brand-new million-dollar house in an extremely expensive neighborhood where the erection of any new house would cause an awful lot of talk. And in a neighborhood right next to their West Point, where they have got to check out the security of everybody who moves into that neighborhood in order to maintain their own security. So, yes, it is very hard to believe that they didn't know that he was there. But there's another story, and again, this is from the Asian press, and it's that the Pakistanis were let in on this raid. There was a raid on January 25th in, of all places, Abbottabad, the very, very same town. It's a city of 100,000. Mm-hmm. And that raid was conducted in order to get the Bali bomber, the guy who bombed a resort in Bali and killed 200 people several years ago. Well, that operation took place successfully on the 25th, and it was carried out by the Pakistani military with the Pakistani Intelligence Service, the ISI. Now, when America, according to this story, when America went to the Pakistanis and said, we're going after another spot in Abbottabad and we want to use the helicopter base that you've allowed us to use in Pakistan in order to get there, the Pakistanis assumed that this was a mop-up operation, that they were going in to get the associates of the Bali bomber. not that they were going in to get Osama bin Laden. So according to this story, the Pakistanis were in on it, but they didn't have a clue as to who the target was. And according to other stories, the SEALs, until the last minute, didn't have an idea of who they were going after.
Why hasn't the funding source of bin Laden had been, why wasn't it dried up? Why wasn't it seized?
Because what bin Laden stands for is something that is believed in by many, many very wealthy people in Saudi Arabia. And why do they believe in it? Because of a deal made 200 years ago with an Islamic fundamentalist group, the Wahhabis, with Wahhab, the guy who started Wahhabism. And children in Saudi Arabia are brought up in the religion of jihad. They are brought up with the idea that any unbeliever is unclean. And that the world will not be complete until the entire world is liberated to the truth and justice of Islam. Now, if you believe that, remember, idealism is something that you have, I have, we all have it. And you, as an idealist, would want to give your money to the one guy who is doing the most to bring the truth, justice, and light of the only true God to the rest of the world. And you might well choose as that instrument Osama bin Laden, who was pure in his idealism.
Let's go to Kevin, St. Paul, Minnesota. There you go. Hi, Kev.
Hey, hi, guys. This regards the question of whether people trust government or not. And let me just start off by just correcting a little something that Howard said. We're not actually split between Democrats and Republicans just a day or two ago. As a matter of fact, there was a poll that came out from Rasmussen, I believe, and it indicates that both Democrats and Republicans comprise just a little under one-third of the population.
Amazing.
So there's a sizable group of people, maybe even a slight bit more than a third, that are neither party. So I don't think you can write off this distrust in government to simply political partisanship. Now, I'll agree that the Coast audience probably is more skeptical than, you know, your average guy on the street. So maybe that might be an aspect of it. But nonetheless, I think it's extraordinarily dangerous to allow the government ever to decide what we are capable of taking or what is too gruesome for us to see or not too gruesome. I mean, for goodness sakes, we saw our own president's head get blown off on television, you know, repeatedly over the last 40 years. We've seen that image. So I think we can handle this. And a big part of our freedom is that not that the government is allowed to tell us or not tell us something, but that we have the choice to either look at it or not. We don't have to. Nobody's saying that if they put up a picture of a gruesome guy with a part of his head blown off that everybody's got to go look at it. They have a choice. That's our freedom. But it's never tolerable to allow the government to make that decision for us. If we can't trust the government, which we don't, I think, in large measure, and if we can't believe that we're being given at least the access to the total truth, then we are in deep trouble. And frankly, I think we are in deep trouble.
Mr. Bloom, he's got some points.
I think that is an extremely good point. Kevin, when the WikiLeaks first broke, I had to do a number of interviews about it. And the difficulty was I couldn't make up my mind about it. I didn't know how I felt. Sometimes it takes a month or two for your feelings to really come to the surface. And after 2 months of watching the way that the WikiLeaks material was used, I realized it was one of the best things that ever happened to us. Truths were being told to us that had been suppressed for a long time and that we needed as citizens to know in order to make judicious decisions, in order to make appropriate choices about things. So, I mean, the fact that the person who is responsible for the WikiLeaks is in jail under bizarre conditions is really abhorrent and goes against everything that America stands for, Bradley Manning. So your point is one of those points I have to think about, but it strikes me as being correct because you're right. We can't trust the government to withhold facts from us and be a nanny government or a daddy government. Ultimately, the daddy and the nanny is us.
I want you to interview me for your new book on God, by the way.
Are you interviewing for the job of God?
No, far from that.
Oh, well, we'll interview you for the Archangel George.
I'd be lucky to invite to sit at the table with them, believe me. Let's go to Scott in Columbus, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Hey, Scott, go ahead.
Thanks, George. George.
Sure.
I was just wanted to point out another big thing that happened on that day. You know, you guys are talking about Obama being the martyr. We had another saint, actually, that was, I guess you could say, in a way, martyred that same day. I don't see any coincidence there. And I wanted to ask, what do you think about the grandchildren that were killed in Libya? And is there any, do you think, any effort underway by the administration to kind of cover that up? Thanks a lot, George.
Okay. And I guess he's talking about Gaddafi's.
Right. Well, step one is that you don't know what's true with Gaddafi and what is not. Talk about distrust of authorities. Gaddafi is really an authority to distrust. And he seems to come up with convenient kids whenever his compound is attacked. Remember, when President Reagan had his compound attacked, he came up with a stepdaughter nobody seemed to have ever heard of before, who was killed in the attack. So it's and I understand there are pictures of this son, but pictures are pictures. You know, you can get them from anywhere. So there is a little bit of a reason to doubt that this happened. And if it did happen, that is, if a son and three grandchildren were killed, I think it would be deplorable. I mean, in fact, as a human, I deplore the fact that we had to kill Osama. Having to kill somebody in order to accomplish a goal is deplorable. I mean, that's the way the world works, and we're not given much of a choice about it sometimes. But no, in the best of all possible worlds, killing anyone for any reason whatsoever, aside from immediate self-defense, is unacceptable.
Do you accept the official story of 9/11, Howard, or do you think there's something else to it?
I absolutely accept the official story. I mean, you know, I watched it from my rooftop. Yesterday I saw a picture of it for the first time in years. It nearly broke me up. It was a very difficult thing to watch. It was a very difficult thing to hear the sirens. Again, we talk about as long as people care about each other, we have the civic virtues that make this country work. It was very difficult to stand on my rooftop in Brooklyn looking at the World Trade Center and hear the sirens screaming down the streets from all of the fire companies around Brooklyn. It was the only time in my life.
Well, but I'm not asking you that. I mean, we
right.
know those horrible things.
Right, but I do accept the existing story. I do not think that it was a government plot on the left. On the left, the story was that it was a government plot set up by Bush to put us all under a military rule.
No, I don't think it was that. But what about the possibility that those groups outside of the country who are trying to bring us down to our knees economically and otherwise may have been involved with bin Laden and his cronies to do what they did? I could accept that.
The Iranians believe that the government set up 9/11. And it also set up Osama. And Osama is a Hollywood fiction set up by Washington in order to justify invading Iraq, Afghanistan, mm-hmm. Pakistan, and, quote, the oil-rich states of the Middle East. That's according to a story today on the Osama killing. Now, do I believe that? I've been on Iranian TV going up against that. I've been horrified by it. But, George, we never know the truth. The truth is always provisional.
That leads us back to our poll and back to what we were talking about initially, and that is this incredible distrust. And I don't know when, Howard, it's going to be turned around, but I think it has to be. If this country is going to continue to advance, if we're going to move toward the future for the centuries ahead, for our children and their children and their children, we have got to change the way people perceive government and the way government treats people.
Well, I think you've made an extremely important point, and we have to change the way we perceive the future, and we have to change the way we perceive our children's children's future, and we have to know that that future is in our hands, and unless we look at the future resolutely and move toward it, we won't have that future.
That's Howard Bloom, and when we come right back, Dr. Judy Wood joins us with probably one of the most incredible stories I've heard in a while. But I want you to sit back and let me know later, what do you think?